Good morning, AWS, and welcome to the AWS Morning Brief. I'm cloud economist Corey Quinn, fixing AWS bills here in San Francisco or wherever I happen to find them. This episode is sponsored by Influx Data, the creators of InfluxDB. InfluxDB is like Amazon TimeStream, except that it has customers. In addition to being actually available for sale and not stuck in preview forever, it's also the de facto time series database you probably use if you need a time series database. They've got a few other products available as open source and managed service offerings. Check them out at influxdata.com. We begin this episode, as we must, with Capital One. Who's in their wallet? A former AWS employee exploited a weakness in a Capital One web application firewall, used that to extract instance credentials which were overly broadly scoped, exposed the personal information of 106 million people, posted it on the internet for some unknown reason, cost Capital One a projected $100 to $150 million to clean all this up this year, and then caused one of the most befuddling things I've ever read in a corporate press release about the incident. Specifically, Capital One said, no bank account numbers or social security numbers were compromised, other than about 140,000 social security numbers of our credit card customers and about 80,000 linked bank account numbers of our secured card customers. So, no bank accounts or social security numbers were compromised, other than those 250,000. Breaches are bad, but stupid statements like that are simply baffling to me. You see, people don't care if 10 folks were breached or 10 million. They care if they were one of them. Trying to downplay the numbers like this just makes Capital One look even worse. Look on the bright side, though. If it had been Wells Fargo instead of Capital One who got popped, people could have compromised the bank accounts of over 950 million Americans. Now, let's talk about what AWS was up to last week, since that's the point of this show. Amazon EC2 Hibernation is now available on Ubuntu 18.04. Fascinating. Historically, you apparently could only hibernate Amazon Linux 1, not Amazon Linux 2 for some reason, and it would seem, based upon this article, that Ubuntu has beaten them to the punch. Awesome. EC2 on-demand capacity reservations can now be shared across multiple AWS accounts, which is awesome. This is really getting towards an idea of being able to have a whole bunch of accounts that you use for testing for various development purposes, but you're able to wind up sharing financial commitments across those. This is going to continue to wind up being a theme that we see in the coming year or two, since it really seems that Amazon is going all in on having accounts be easier to provision and spread out. ECS now supports multiple load balancer target groups. Awesome. That means you can now have multiple load balancers pointing at multiple things inside of containers that no one's entirely sure what workload's running where anymore. This is a useful capability, but doesn't go very far towards making it more understandable as far as what it's actually doing. Amazon FSx now supports Windows shadow copies for restoring files to previous versions. This is handy. It lets you effectively have an end user restore a file that they've accidentally made a breaking change to. Picture it as an undo level button for the file system. NetApp had something very similar for this back in NFS, I want to say 15 years ago, and that was fantastic. I'm sort of surprised nothing else has done something like that in quite the same way, but this gets closer. Amazon MSK, their managed Kafka service, adds support for the latest version of Kafka, which is 2.2.1, and expands to a few more regions as well, which no one cares about, but they snuck that one into this description, so I'd be forced to mention it. Good work. Amazon Pinpoint adds campaign and application metrics APIs in the hopes of one day adding its first customer. Pinpoint is a wrapper around SES, SNS, and a few other things. It's sort of what you'd want to use to build, for example, a large email newsletter if you hated yourself and didn't want to have any of the heavy lifting done for you by a provider that specializes in it. Pinpoint is promising, but it's not quite there, speaking as someone who tried to use it and failed hilariously. Amazon Polly launches neural text-to-speech and newscaster voices, which is unfortunate. It means that AWS is finally coming after my radio voice and attempting to outcompete me on my own ground. But you know who they won't be able to outcompete? Chaos Search. Chaos Search gives you an Elasticsearch-compatible API with unlimited data retention, because that data lives in your own S3 bucket. You don't have to load it into a database to search all of it. and then pay for instances to run that database for you. It doesn't require other application changes, and it cuts your Elasticsearch bills by roughly 80% on average without the terrible parts of having to manage Elasticsearch. They're not just sponsoring this podcast. They're also a vendor and a product that I adore. Check them out at chaossearch.io. My thanks to them for sponsoring this ridiculous podcast. Amazon Sumerian now supports physically based rendering, which I only assume means that now those freaky hosts live in the real world and can beat the crap out of me in person. The Amplify framework adds a predictions category. And it's funny because I predict that Amplify is going to just go all in and become AWS for JavaScript sooner rather than later. They've announced new resources and a website to accelerate your cloud adoption, because there's nothing that makes more money or sense for Amazon than having its customers shove cloud down the metaphorical and sometimes literal throat of other departments in their company. The previously announced AWS Middle East Bahrain region has launched. That's ME-South-1. Having grown up there myself, I consider that to be Southern Maine. Congratulations on the new Southern Maine region. AWS IoT Events now supports AWS CloudFormation. Only 2 months after IoT Events went generally available, or about as long as CloudFormation takes to roll back from a failed update. AWS RoboMaker now supports offline logs and metrics for the AWS RoboMaker CloudWatch Cloud Extension. I don't know why this relatively minor change merits its own update post, but here we are. EBS's default volume type is now updated globally to GP2, off of its previous update of what the hell else would it have been. GP2 is the standard SSD-backed EBS volume that, frankly, you don't see people using too much of anything except this. If you're using something that isn't GP2, stop for a minute and consider why that might be. The answer may surprise you. Amazon's DocumentDB with MongoDB compatibility, yes, that's its proper name, adds aggregation pipeline and diagnostics capabilities. Wonderful. In every day, in every way, it's getting a little bit less like MongoDB. And for example, it's not nearly as prone to drop valuable production data down the memory hole. Amazon QuickSight adds support for custom colors, embedding for all user types, and new regions. That's all three wrapped into one update post in the hopes that by throwing enough things at the wall, they might eventually be able to get more than a couple of customers. Maybe if we give people custom colors, that'll drive adoption. It's as good an attempt as any. AWS Batch now supports the Elastic Fabric Adapter, also known as Underpants. What that lets it do is spin up workloads that are able to do a lot more dynamic, high-throughput network activity. It's definitely a great enhancement for a lot of these use cases, but I just find the name Elastic Fabric Adapter to be too funny to take seriously. AWS CloudFormation now supports higher stack sets limits. This is just the default limit increase, which is super handy, but often you don't know that that's there right until you smack into it. It doesn't solve the problem, it just kicks the can a little bit down the road. AWS X-Ray is now available in Bahrain. That's right, they waited half a day after the region launched, then announced support so they could get their own update post. Good for them. Lambda at Edge now adds support for Python 3.7. I've never been a huge fan of running dynamic code against web requests simply to inject static headers as you have to do on CloudFront, but now I can't object to it solely on the grounds of JavaScript is terrible, because now Python's supported. Good for it. New model tracking capabilities for Amazon SageMaker are now generally available. That's huge, because model tracking is, you know, it doesn't even matter what I say to that, because no one can wrap their head around what machine learning really is, and no one wants to appear dumb about it. So I could say that model tracking is actually tracking people who try on clothes for a living, and most people would nod sagely and be convinced I was saying something true. It's sort of an emperor has no clothes approach. You can now analyze VPC flow log data and use S3 as a destination, as opposed to having to shove it into something that you don't want to deal with, such as literally anything else. A white paper was released called Preparing for the California Consumer Privacy Act, which is the real title. The honest title would be more along the lines of Holy Crap, GDPR Lite is coming to America. And that's a wrap for this week's episode of the AWS Morning Brief. I'm Corey Quinn, cloud economist for the Duckbill Group. And if you have an AWS bill that's terrifyingly expensive to you, we can help. go to lastweekinaws.com/services to learn more. If you've enjoyed this show, please leave a positive review for it in iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. If, on the other hand, you've hated this show, please leave a positive review for it in iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts.
This has been a Humble Pod production.
Stay humble.